The following program is intended for mature audiences.
Previously on AintSaintsRadio.com.
DeKalb, a guy from NIU, wants to interview us. Ain't Saints Radio.
Yeah. He wants to interview us?
Yeah.
Oh, that's going to be scary. Yeah,
over the next couple of weeks, all right?
On the phone, or is he coming?
No, we're going to DeKalb. Yeah. We're going to NIU campus.
You coming, John?
I don't remember being briefed on this.
Talk to you about it at the Eight States meeting, okay, that we had the dinner, okay? All right, but there will be more to come. I had to submit three of our shows that they can go over and see which one they want to promote. I submitted Richard and Dave, okay? I love Richard's show, and Dave's show was outstanding. All right, anyway, I think that's all the news we got.
Welcome to Mental Illness in Pop Culture. On this podcast, we are interested in looking at mental health topics in as many different types of pop culture as possible. And today, we're going to do a podcast about a podcast, a meta podcast, if you will. I'm Scott.
This is Leanne.
This is Joe.
And today, we are really pleased to have with us the crew from the Ain't Saints Radio podcast about recovery and redemption. Could you tell us a little bit about who you are and your podcast and how people can find it?
Go ahead, John. Go ahead, give them some.
I don't know what to say.
Of course. Hi, I am Gerald. I am the big third of the Ain't Saints crew. To my right is John. He's the tall third at 6'8" of the Ain't Saints crew. And then Lisa, the conscience and the credibility. We call her the she third.
And the normie.
And the normie. That's also important because, like you had said, Scott, our podcast is about recovery and redemption. We deal mostly with people who are recovering from drugs and alcohol, but we...
In some form or another, not necessarily in active recovery. We've had people who are still in the throes of their addiction, wanting something different in your life that we try to focus on.
What had happened to them, how they got in the position they were, what they did about it, and how their life is today. And we have had some outstanding guests, including a man named Jam Alker, who is a recording artist, who was able to come back from his addiction to heroin, which was mentioned on our show, to reignite his career as a recording artist. And now he's all over the place. He just got back from Montreal. But when I asked him to do the show, I didn't know much about him except that he was a budding recording artist. Now, all of a sudden, he's working with Three Doors Down. So, you know, and he sat in our studio, our little humble studio, which is in my apartment, which is in a ghetto.
The most amazing thing about the podcast we did with Jam was that he took out his phone and he set it up and he did a live feed. That was the first time that we ever had live feed on our podcast. And Gerald, I thought he was going to wet himself.
I was petrified.
But it turned out great. And I mean,
that was the same time that we booted up and actually did a dry run of our live system.
Yes, we started this podcast a couple of years ago, and we've had over 70 guests. I've lost track.
There's quite a few.
We've had a couple of people who came in and did an additional show, including a woman who's right now, she's doing a three-part show. We haven't aired the third part yet, but our show has grown because we've kept our word, or I've made the promise, and John and Lisa have helped me keep my word. The trust issue, when you're dealing with putting people's most innermost issues, you know, on a website, not Facebook, has to be there, and we've been able to capture that. A lot of what we do also has to do with me being a perfectionist as much as I can to give them the best show that we can possibly give them. But yeah, we've had quite a few guests. John likes to do a show once a week. He said that we should do topic shows as well. I haven't found that our topic shows are a big seller because it's basically us three and that gets old fast. And I have to really think about how we're going to carry out a topic for 45 minutes to an hour. But when we have people on that show, I look at it like this. I look at it like intervention focusing only on the producers. Nobody's going to watch that. In my opinion, nobody's going to watch that all. But when they get a guest every week who is giving up everything they got, I find that to be far more interesting and captivating and rewarding in the end.
So Scott, as Scott does, has an agenda of how this is supposed to go, but as you talk, I obviously have a million questions in my head. So I'm going to detour.
Well, we're all for it.
This is called organic, and that's how it works.
Well, and what I always say in my classes is, I've got something planned, but if something else happens, that's even better.
So, I mean, my very, very first question is, why this? Obviously, your journeys, your experiences have somehow brought you to this being the topic and the passion. And I love your heart for your guests, let me just say. I think that's fantastic. Give us the journey as to why.
I don't know if Lisa touched on it earlier, but I have a niece who was a working comedian in New York, which I don't have to tell you how difficult that is. And she was able to parlay her onstage stand-up act into a job with Jimmy Fallon on The Tonight Show as a writer. Now, she used to have a podcast called Sleepyhead Podcast done in New York where she would basically invite people into her bedroom, into her bed, and they would talk like they had just woke up. It was a crazy idea, but she did have listeners, and it was something she could do to stay busy with while she was waiting on her next gig. Her father, of course, hated it. He hated the idea, but he did do a show which was very special. We have not, that's my brother Curtis, we have not been able to get him into the studio yet. But it was an excellent show. And I was able to get that idea from her. And I've always wanted to talk crap.
Yeah.
one of the few things that I can do well. I wish my vocabulary was better. And, you know, Lisa lends to the credibility of that. She's always doubting Waukegan East High School, by the way.
I have heard that.
Always.
Well, but see, we didn't understand that it just failed him. Uh-huh.
That's right. That's right. That was the only subject they had for Waukegan East High School. But I was able to talk to a few people, and we thought it might be a good idea to have as service work and giving back and helping other people who might think they're alone. That's really where this started. And I took this dumbass idea to Lisa, and Lisa, like I like to say, she was down with it, and John wasn't opposed to it. And we had another member, but she quickly exited the scene. And I'm glad she did, because we're still friends today because she did. But we had a nucleus. Lisa came up with all of the initial layout of funds for the equipment. And John told me he could set up the website and then he could run all of the computer stuff. And so that left me with trying to figure out how to structure the show, getting guests, and packaging the show.
Yeah.
And you know, that can be difficult. But we've survived. We survived our early mistakes. Some of our first shows were just garbage. And mostly... Oh, stop. They were.
We've experienced that.
But each of us took on a part of this show and really gave it our all. And that has since grown together and we've gotten a better product. We've overcome noise issues. We've overcome fans. We've overcome trades going by. We've overcome kids in the yard, in the courtyard.
Even fireworks.
And fireworks, all of it. And we've had outstanding guests. We've had guests that were very generous in their stories.
I would definitely concur with that. So I want to talk about some of the reasons. I want to talk about how this meeting came to be. Gerald and I went to Waukegan East High School.
Mm-hmm.
Class Bulldogs. Go Bulldogs. Class of 1982. By the way,
and you didn't make any of the...
I don't know if you've ever seen Gerald's senior picture.
Oh, well, this
are
is
you
not video.
You have
to put it on the website.
Which one?
It's another
one.
That's right.
What's you were wrong? So cute.
I was cute.
What are you talking about?
You've been exposed.
Like
no. Oh, that's handsome.
No, life has beaten the crap out of me. No.
You had a big part of that.
I had a big part of that.
A helping hand.
I was asked why we started this. I've been in recovery for almost 8 years now. Drug and alcohol, mostly cocaine and Jack Daniels. So I can sympathize with everybody that comes on that program. I was nervous coming here, but I wasn't as nervous coming here as I am when somebody comes to the studio, because I know what it feels like. I know all the doubt they have. Is my story going to hurt me? And the number one thing we do is protect the guest in the show. Without that, nothing else matters. If somebody says take something out, I don't miss it. I will stay up an extra hour to make sure I catch every name that they might have said erroneously.
We've even had a show where the person said, I'm not comfortable. And we just scratched the end.
One person. Our bylaws. What is it again?
I'm still
trust each other.
Yeah, trust each other.
Trust each other. Have fun. Be professional. And there's one more, and I can't remember right now.
Never hurt anyone?
Hurt nobody. Do no harm, basically. You know what I mean? Yes, do no harm, trust each other, be professional, and have fun. That is our bylaws, even though Elisa has a tattoo of it on her back. She'll show you before the show.
His body is untattooed. That's why
I listened to that episode. I heard it.
A promise made to her father.
That's right.
That's right.
I broke all the other ones. I have to keep that one, too.
But yeah, we have fun.
4,000 is not bad.
So after Waukegan East High School, you and I didn't have, and we didn't, I knew who you were,
yes,
but we didn't hang out together.
No.
And I don't think we had any classes together, maybe PE.
Maybe.
Were you on the college track?
Yes.
That's why you didn't have any classes?
That's right.
You were just getting out of high school track.
Well, I got married in my senior year.
Oh.
Okay.
What?
Yeah. Yes, it did.
I was just hoping for a prom
date. That's right. From January 1982 to the end of that school year, I called in for myself if I needed a day off, and it took the principal that long to get used to it. I wanted to get out of my father's house and away from under his thumb, which we have reconciled greatly on that. And, you know, I have come to, in recovery, I have learned that, you know, what my father tried to tell me was the right road. I just didn't want to listen to it. And he didn't really know how to tell me, you know, what he was trying to say.
Without preaching it.
No, I wish preaching. I wish that was preaching. It was more like, you know, my house, my rules. He's the one that told me never to buy a motorcycle, never to get out of a motorcycle. That was my third wife that got me on a motorcycle. But, yeah.
For people listening, you all biked here today, I believe.
No. No, we want him because he doesn't.
Okay.
That's the only reason.
I'm the only same person.
Oh, hear me. If it was just Lisa and I, she would have rode her bike and I would have rode mine.
So, fast forward, I looked on Facebook and you and I, because we were from Waukegan East, and did you go to the 30th reunion?
I went to all of them.
I love our reunions. So, I'm asking you that,
he's right. And I'll tell you why. Because we went to one of the most racially mixed schools ever. And it really had nothing to do with race, how we hung out. We hung out, the smart kids hung out together and the athletes hung out together. And then we all kind of got together. You know, we had one of the tightest classes I've ever seen. And, we didn't have the petty jealousy stuff over crap, you know, you're smart, so we don't talk to you. We didn't have any of that. And our reunions have proven that fact, because we get to the reunion and people get up from this table, sit at that table, get up from that table, sit at that table, because we were all a family. As much as that kind of diversity can be a family, we were.
It's funny that you say that, because my high school is the exact same way. I graduated in 88, so 6 years after you guys.
Where'd you graduate from?
Peoria Woodruff.
Oh, so.
Go Warriors. However, the school has since shut down because of budget cuts. But, you know, Peoria is a town that's a little bit bigger than Waukegan, but it still has that, you know, working class, hardscrabble attitude. And so all us kids, I mean, I had friends that were white, black, Latino, Asian, across the board, you know, and I didn't have to go to college for that.
Yeah,
it's a great experience.
It's always weird when I hear somebody say, well, I didn't have a black friend or a black person until I got into college. That is always weird, because we didn't come from that environment.
I went to high school in Maryland. My father was in the military, so he traveled. He moved every 3 years. We happened to be in Maryland when I was in high school, but we actually had a vocational wing. It was one of the largest schools in Maryland, but they had a whole wing for vocational, but you shared homerooms. So you really got to know everybody. It was an amazing school because everybody came together regardless of whether you were college track, whether you were an athlete, whether you were in the vocational wing. Everybody got along. It was an amazing high school. It really was.
Problem was
a great experience.
Lisa didn't stay in one place long enough to get that bond with as many people as she should have.
Fortunately, my father was stationed at the Pentagon for 3 years, and in Maryland, you start high school as a sophomore. So for those 3 years, I was in the same school, in the same place with the same kids. So, but you know what? It was still because of proximity to the Pentagon and Fort Belvoir and some of the other bases. A lot of the kids that went there were military, so everybody was in the same situation. It was good life.
Our normie.
Well, and I brought up the 30th because that's when you and I became Facebook friends.
Mm-hmm.
I went back and looked that up today. Then fast forward now till this most recent May, and I post on Facebook that I'm going on a road trip looking for some podcasts, and less than 1 minute, maybe less than 30 seconds.
Gerald is a Facebook.
Gerald has posted, Marketing. That's the first one. And so since he was the first one to reply, that's what I listened to first. And so I probably, well, I'll tell you. So I was probably driving through Kentucky, and I have no idea what this podcast is about. And I put it on, and there's some good music, and then some banter, but there's a few F-bombs being dropped. And then
most of those were John.
And I hear someone being called Gerald. I'm like, is that Gerald Cooper? No way. And then I hear Lisa say, well, a product of Waukegan Public Schools. And I'm like, wow.
My favorite line.
And then he said, oh shit.
I usually have earned it if she says it. So hugely bad grammar thing.
I listened to 4 episodes. And I would say since that time, Ain't Saints Radio is hands down my favorite podcast to listen to.
Wow, thank you. Very nice.
And a lot of it is from things that you've already talked about, but I just wanted to say some of my impressions.
Mm-hmm.
One, I like the banter. And I really like how you all get along. You're very honest with each other and you give each other shit, but in a really kind of playful, affectionate way.
No animosity.
And the guests' stories, and it's not just the guests talking, though. It's collaborative. Like with Pam, you talked a lot about how much you could relate and how you felt like you got a lot from listening to her, too. And I'm just jumping around here, but
we do that a lot.
The Dave episode, which I listened to early Sunday morning. I was on a plane back from New York listening to the Dave episode. Got like tears coming out of my eyes. I'm like, I hope nobody's...
He made her cry twice in one show.
It was, oh my gosh. And every episode, after that episode is over, I think, no, that's my favorite episode. And John, your episode, I thought that was just amazing. And part of what I loved about Gerald in that episode is like, you're not politically correct. You're just saying things, but you're just saying things from your heart. And so it's not offensive if you're not saying things the right way.
Yeah, I try not to hurt anyone, but the only two things we don't discuss are religion. Spirituality, yes, of course, but religion and politics. It's just too divisive, and we don't want to do that.
Yeah. So no episodes on Donald Trump coming to
absolutely.
There have been some.
A few weeks ago, a guest opened the door, so we got to talk about it.
Lisa
sneaks stuff in all the time. We've had a guest to talk about. My favorite episode, I have to say this, and hopefully he'll listen to this. My favorite episode is Nick. And I'll tell you why Nick is my favorite episode. Nick was the first person whose music, because I get a lot of music or karaoke version of songs off of, you know, YouTube and whatever, right? Play a couple seconds of it, whatever, for my sound bites. Lisa wants me to have the introduction songs underneath a minute. And I struggle to do that because every person gets their own
introduction
song, because I try to find something that either fits their mood or their personality, who they are, what they have to talk about. Sometimes that can take hours to find the right song. But I know it when I find it because I got goosebumps automatically every time. We had a guy named Nick, and Nick used to be a drummer. He used to have a band and all this other stuff, and then he got enough of getting high on the road and he got off the road. And he hasn't gone back to being a drummer yet since then. But he told me the name of the band, which didn't make any sense. It was some 1976 it was something weird. It was a date. And I went on the internet and I found music and I pasted it together. I edited his music, took people out of his music. I upped his drums. I did all kinds of weird stuff. And only thing I was thinking about, I hope he knows that I respect his music and did everything I could to make it good. Because when I'm editing people's thoughts and ideas and vocals, it's one thing. But when I mess around with someone's music, especially somebody I got to see once a week, I gave it everything I had and he loved it. And so that's why that was my favorite episode. Don't tell my mother, because she thinks that her episode is my favorite.
Well, that was his come to Jesus moment when his mom came.
Uh-huh. Because I didn't think she was going to do it. My father would never do it. Yeah. He doesn't have a sense of humor. But my mom, yeah, she's where I got all my sense of humor from.
I love all of the humor. It's like contrasting spices that we've got these stories that are compelling, beyond compelling. The amount of authenticity, which is really something that we promote in counseling. We talk about the core conditions of person-centered counseling. One of them is authenticity, also empathy, and unconditional positive regard. And I find all of that to just be permeating every episode of 8-6.
Positivity is the key. Lisa's pretty positive. John can be as negative as anybody, but he has learned to be critical of me or something the guests have said, but not be negative about it. And I'm very proud about his growth. When I first met John, he wouldn't say anything to anybody. Okay. And now he's talking shit on the radio on a weekly basis.
Great one-liners.
I always love at the end about what are you going to do today.
You'd be surprised how many times guests like look at me and say,
"Oh yeah, what are you going to do, John? Oh, I'm going to get high." And they all know he's in recovery.
The pat line is drugs.
And the guests look at them, especially if they haven't heard the show, which is one of the things I try to make sure they listen to one show before they walk into the. And it's not a hornet's nest, because we're going to take care of them. Otherwise, what's the point? But they're all scared and they're all anxious and all this other stuff. But I try to get them to listen to one show. And I can't tell you how many people come in that studio. How many shows have you listened to? Oh, none. Really? I sent you 8.
And you know what I can't understand is they sit there in these meetings. And to me, the meetings are gut-wrenching. I mean, I couldn't even imagine. Because when they have an Oprah speaker, then I go sometimes with them. But these people are telling their stories. And I just think to myself, or when they're telling their stories on the podcast, how could you be ashamed or anything like that when you tell the whole world what you did? That you just bared your soul. And they do it at these meetings. What is different about this podcast? Because we're not going to treat them badly. We're going to be kind to them. Gerald does the best he can to make their story and their recovery. And shit happens to people. I don't come from that. So to me, when these people go through some drugs and the addiction and all the other kind of stuff.
So how old were you when you first shot up? Oh, 4 years old. This is like, oh my God. And John and I don't even flinch. Shit, could have said 3.
That's...
If you listen to any of our shows, if I'm dumb enough to ask who's your favorite, they always, and I mean always, say Lisa, because she's compassionate. Lisa listens to what they have to say, and I guess maybe the normie thing wants to give him a hug. Regina and I like, just go to another meeting. Lisa wants to give him a hug and buy him ice cream. I'm so sorry that, you know, you were beaten as a child. Regina and I like, yeah, we hear it every club. Well, there you go. But they always say that Lisa's their favorite. Every now and then, they say John's a favorite, and I just have to edit that out. No, I'll say this now. I don't edit anything that John says, ever.
Except for the meows.
Okay, then he's right. Every now and then he gives
cat noise. That was your chance to put one in.
I edit that shit out. And John has a tagline for... I'm going to hit him with this coffee mug. John has a tagline for the show. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the 8-6 Radio Podcast, which I think is absolutely brilliant. He came up with that by himself, right?
I did that the first show. The show that no one has ever heard.
We won't let him stop. Because it's perfect. It's perfect. And every now and then, he wants to change it. No, don't change our trademark. That's the only thing I ever clean up from John. I take the cat stuff out, and if he screws up our intro, I just dump a good one in there. Lisa, I only clean up when every now and then Lisa will go off script and she'll stutter. And stuttering, I don't care about me. You know, I don't care. But her... Lisa's our credibility. You know, one of these days, if we ever have a real news story, she'll be the one to deliver it, and I want her to be credible and smart. She's brilliant. Everybody in this room is smarter than me. So I will clean up Lisa every now and then. Me?
Depends on the subject.
Me personally?
I don't care.
As long as I didn't hurt anybody, I don't take anything out.
I was wondering, speaking of the tag and the name Ain't Saints Radio, where did the name come from and who came up with it and, you know, what's behind it?
It came from the How It Works version that's read at every AA meeting that we are not saints. And it's just a variation of that because we are all fallible. We've all made mistakes. But have we learned anything from it? And do we do our best to recover from that and redeem ourselves and help the next person up? And that's what it's all about. I'm available. I have a couple of sponsees. John's mine. I have a couple of sponsees. And the phone call that did come through before we started recording, that was one of my sponsees. So, you know, it's all about giving back and being accountable and responsible. And I learned how to do that through AA and my sponsor. And that fool right there, Lisa. Lisa, I don't know why, but she saw what I guess our guests see. Somebody was compassionate and couldn't understand, but still cared. And her caring helped me get to each level because I was unemployable when I met her. We started at Home Depot together in the worst entry-level job they had. But Lisa's like, she made an investment in me. And I guess because she saw something, you know, worth investing. And I try to get that. I try to be that way, you know, have something worth investing. Because if you're worthless and you feel worthless and you act worthless, nobody wants to help you. All you have to do is act like you're worthy of somebody investing in you and everybody wants to help. And I found that to be true. And the first person who really stepped up and helped me to become, I got back into driving. I was revoked when we met. But now I get to drive FedEx trucks through Chicago. That does not happen.
Yeah. We should do a podcast just about the getting your driver's license back.
That's insane.
It doesn't happen.
Yeah. I've had friends that had to deal with it.
No, he found out he was getting it quickly. He found out he could get his license back. So we started talking about it. So I said, well, where can you do all this? And one day, well, Springfield. I said, let's go. We drove to Springfield.
That day.
You really regretted the trip back.
Oh, yeah. We almost broke up there on the trip back because I hadn't had a license in 3.5 years.
And I was like clutching everything I could hold on to. I'm going to die in this fool's head. His license.
We are yelling at each other. People in other, other vehicles are looking at us. But, you know, we survived a lot of it because we really care about each other. And like I said, I made an investment in her. Yeah. She's made one in me. When I met Lisa, she just let people walk on her. She had a backbone and apparently she hadn't exercised it in decades. And what I was able to help her with was to assert herself and take control of her life. And she's done an outstanding job of that. And I'm proof that her investment in me at least was good so far. Okay. Nobody invested in John.
I'm wondering about how the show, this is Mental Illness in Pop Culture.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I've always kind of noticed in pop culture is the way that people have a tendency of talking about folks who are struggling with addiction, struggling through it. And I'm wondering if you all notice if we're changing as a country in how we talk about addiction, how we think people who are going through addiction, struggling with it, that kind of thing. Are we really getting better as a society in accepting the fact that sometimes, most times, oftentimes, people become addicted and need help and support, and that it's not simply just their fault? You know, it's a medical issue.
Yeah. We have to thank the opioid crisis for that, because before that, it was just dirty people with dirty habits in dirty places doing dirty things. And the opioid crisis, once it got to the front page of the newspaper, housewives are going to wherever they got to go to get whatever they got to get. To be honest with you, once it affects little white kids,
uh-huh.
It gets attention.
Yeah.
Children are dying at a rate that we can't even comprehend now. They're outdying the elder at this point, from what I've been able to understand. As a whole, it's no longer a dirty little secret or dirty little people in dirty little places. It is affecting people's parents and people's kids and people's wives and people's husbands. From what I understand, everybody has somebody in their family who was addicted to a pain pill or addicted to heroin or addicted to cocaine or addicted to meth. We're not even getting to Jack Daniels.
Right.
And the
hey, don't besmirch Jack.
That's right.
Jack and I have. Can enjoy Jack Daniels. And
hey, I enjoy Jack Daniels just fine.
Jack Daniels and I have an agreement. He don't cross the street for me and I don't cross the street for him. But yes, to answer your question, Joe, it's so bad out there right now. It has done wonders in getting the attention of people. maybe not this group of politicians, but the next group of politicians will be more affected. Their families will be more affected. The money's coming. At some point, we will put more money in rehab than we will in prison.
You know, I really hate when people say, it's not now, it's coming soon, though. That always implies that you just have to sit back and wait. But it's our job to be the forerunners and force that change, because politics doesn't change without people changing it. And so, you know, I disagree with Gerald. I mean, in terms of interpersonal relationships, people talking to each other, yes, I think it's changed. Over the last couple of years, I've gotten much more sympathetic responses rather than, oh, why can't you just stop drinking?
Yeah, loser.
Yeah. That was probably, how long have I been sober? Like 7 years? Like,
seven and a half years.
Better part of 8 years now. That's what I would get. I think that talking to people, that has changed. But news media and politics is still very much cold and uncaring about it. Just in point of fact, the government wants to keep imprisoning people for these minor drug offenses rather than spending a little bit of money on rehab and possibly helping them. And instead, we send them to prison and create harder hardened criminals.
John is still young, okay? John is still kind of young, but, you know, the civil rights, how long did that take? And that's something that had to be done. But how long did that take? Just the civil rights itself, that era. So nothing is done quickly that is of that magnitude. But it will be done, because once a politician's kid is hooked on opiates, it's just a matter of time before they say, hey, I have the power and the position to do something about it, and I'm going to start that ball rolling. And it's just a matter of time. But if it was just cocaine and just heroin, nothing would have ever changed. But meth really got people's attention, because meth was in the farmlands of Iowa, all right? Mm-hmm. That got people's attention, but this opioid crisis is going to prove important in the fight against... Sorry, I lost my train of thought. But in
the stigma and the judgment.
There you go.
Yeah. Right.
I was looking for that word.
Stigma?
Yeah.
Yeah. John didn't say it?
No, we'll give her credit, Scott.
But and I think that it's really helping our collective consciousness kind of reach a critical mass or come to a tipping point about understanding. I really agree with what you were talking about, John, in terms of the interpersonal aspect of it. And I think that the more that we are able to understand, because probably everybody of our circle of friends and family, there's a lot that we don't know about other people and that people are afraid to talk about it. You know, and I think with the Ain't Saints podcast also that people are coming on the show and being more willing to talk about that. And it's, I think that it's contributing to that.
We've only had four people that came on the show under an alias. I believe it was four. No more than that.
Yeah.
So that right there tells me that
people are... No, it's not just four people. We had a person on the show once. Her father was a prominent dentist in one of the affluent suburbs. And she was just a total mess, passing out on her lawn, stealing her father's prescription pads to get heavy-duty drugs from the pharmacist.
That was Trish.
And it was crazy. But I think the one story that I heard the most, it was on an open meeting one time. These three women got up. Each one of them was as beautiful as the other. I mean, they came up there. They were just gorgeous. They had the same story. They sent their kids to school in the morning, and then they went to the airport and got on a plane and mule drove back to the United States.
Damn.
Yeah. You would have thought they were
hardcore.
Honest to God.
What you just said is your expression and your reaction is what Lisa always does when they say the most insane, and they can make Lisa cry so easy.
I was going to ask you, since this has been a stretch, I mean, this has been learning for you, clearly. What has that done now that you know and you see quote-unquote normal people in these struggles? I mean, at a minimum, your compassion is probably mountain, you know, but what impact has that had on you? I actually had a touch of the addiction in my family, not my personal family, but my first husband. I met him, we hit it off, we were so much alike. I got pregnant, we decided to get married. I moved to California with him when he got in the military. Met his family. Oh my God. His father and mother started first thing in the morning. Father was a drinker, the mother was a pill popper. And yet my husband told me one time, because my father had a drink before dinner every night when he got home from work, he had a drink before dinner. He told me my father was an alcoholic. This was before I met his parents. When I got to California and I saw this,
I thought, you have no idea what my father has. One drink before dinner, and his parents, I mean, they were just completely drug addicts. He ended up overdosing himself, and that was it. But it's, I mean, everybody, I think, is touched by it in some way or another. Because I think partly because her father was an addict, my daughter did have some. She did go to rehab. I sent her to rehab. She was out of control. And she's been good since. She's a great person. She has a great husband.
Her daughter's done two of our shows, yeah.
And she still questions, you know, whether she's doing the right thing or if she's, the wife thinks something is, you know, she's doing, not doing something right. But when you have it in your family like that, I think that's the worst. And like I said, I could sit and have two or three drinks or some two or three beers and that's it. That's all I do. I don't want to have more. It doesn't, usually I'm like, oh, I feel sick. So it's hard when you do have a child like that and it gives you that perspective. But it's still, like Gerald says, when these people tell their stories, my heart breaks. My heart breaks for them. But they've come so far. And that has got to be hard. It has got to be the hardest thing they'll ever in their life. The loss and the, you know,
It's hard.
It is hard.
Recovery is hard. I mean, it's easy for bitches. That's what I like to say because I know what it took. John knows what it took. Everybody that comes on that show who is recovering from drug and alcoholism, they know. And I want to make something also clear. We are not opposed to people coming on the show that aren't necessarily in the program, that aren't necessarily quitting. We've had people who are drinkers. They're all recovering from something.
By the program you made,
by the program AANACA, or as my sponsor would say, buffet. My sponsor's name, Big Sexy.
You gotta love anybody that can make it money.
That's what we try to do. Yeah. We try to make it funny. Because John and I could literally laugh at stuff that most people would just...
Yes,
kind of like what you did.
Because the people fought and they came back. They've got a chance to redeem themselves. And addiction is not funny, but it's what we got. And we're gonna make it funny if we can. I'm going to edit the show to make it as funny and as uplifting as possible. Because that's what we try to do. Make that show uplift. That you too. If you got a problem, go see somebody, get some help. And everybody that comes on that show, they know they're not alone. If they didn't know before they sat down, they know it when they get up to go. And I just got to thank Lisa. I love the way that she approaches the show. We all come at the show from a different way, and like you said, Scott, it all kinds of blends but without mixing, and I really like that. I love their contribution and I love the contribution of the guests, and I couldn't be more grateful. Right, you had told me that we would be doing this when I was in the mental institution back in 2010, I would have said not a chance. But back then I thought my world was over and something had to be done. I got drunk in my living room drinking my Jack Daniels, and apparently somebody heard me say that I was going to off myself. And before I knew it, I was in the hospital. And then I saw the next morning when I sobered up, I saw my boots sitting outside that room I was in. And I said, well, if nobody wants me, I'm going to go. So I reached to get my boots. Before I had the first boot on, there were 7 officers saying, Mr. Cooper, you're not going anywhere. Next thing, I'm in some mental institution and I'm being strapped in and all this other stuff. They bring me through the door and the first thing I see in the mental institution is a naked lady, and she was hot, running down the hallway. Running down the hallway, buck ass naked. And all I could think of is this usually would be either really sexy or really funny. And it was neither. I knew at that point that I had crossed my own line. I had given somebody a reason to lock me up. And the reason I do not like mental institutions is because that is the only place in this world that you have absolute no rights. You don't have a right to your own shoelaces. Once you go into that door of the mental institution, you are subject to whatever they want. And if you're lucky, you got people who are really caring about what you need. But I was scared shitless. And I said, no matter what happens, I am never coming back here again. Now, we had a woman on our show recently who went into a mental institution by herself. She went into rehab sober. It was because she felt that she needed the extra help. I still don't understand that, but I respect her for doing it.
This might be a weird question, but just as you're saying that, it made me think of it. Have you guys ever thought about having people on the show who are in denial as opposed to who are in recovery?
I would agree with it.
We had one woman. I'm not going to give her name. You'd have to dig that show out. But we had one woman who, she just couldn't get it. And she came on the show and she said all the stuff that she thought people wanted to hear, but she had struggled. Matter of fact, she was struggling when she did the show. It was one of the few shows that I almost pulled. If it had leaned a little bit more toward us using her, I would have pulled the show. But I did check with her and she gave me permission and she said, no, I want it out there because I know how bad I sounded on the show. And I felt bad about doing it. Like I said, I almost pulled the show and she's still struggling, but she has my number. I have talked to her, you know, every other month or so. And one of these days, I hope she gets it without going all the way to, you know, rock bottom, because everybody doesn't come back from rock bottom. I was lucky. I didn't have to go to rock bottom. I was just giving away stuff in my life that I didn't want to give away anymore. I gave away a career. I gave away my ability to drive and ride motorcycles. I gave away my ex-wife, who I love dearly. And I had enough.
You're free.
That's the only thing I had left. I mean, except for the time I spent in the mental institution. Other than that, I hadn't been incarcerated, but it was just around the corner. And I didn't want to see it. I saw my black hole and I didn't want any of it. So I was lucky. The gift of desperation. And I was able to say I was scared and I was hurting and people helped me.
One of the things that we try to do on mental illness and pop culture is be somewhat educated.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering...
Do you know what that means?
Yeah.
Educated.
I got it.
That's, I just wanted to check.
That's
I didn't want
cold.
To get lost.
That is so cold.
You made Joe forget what he was saying. This is impressive stuff.
Excellent.
I think it was educative.
Somebody
will
say something.
Oh, hell no. We got
to educate on this podcast.
we're trying to educate.
Oh, my God.
We have Lisa's reluctant news at the end of the show. And it wasn't always called that, but the more I kept pressing Lisa, Lisa would just lose her shit. And I'm like, Lisa, just give us two paragraphs or two sentences about a news item, and John and I will take it from there. And so we ended up calling it Lisa's Reluctant News, and we try to educate through there.
Do you know why it's reluctant? I'll be honest with you. I never get to pick the topic. If I got to pick a topic, it would not be reluctant.
It would be
whatsoever.
Lisa's excited news.
Maybe she needs some autonomy.
Bullshit. No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
I'm not sure what that word bullshit means.
It means he doesn't want to hear anymore. It's like
oh, no. Oh, no. Yes, I can be.
That's
a little,
why he calls himself the big thug.
I can be a little heavy handed.
Victoria?
Well. Okay, all right, you got three people. I'll say this, you got three people, you cannot have three visions, okay? And I have a vision, and like I said, Lisa bought into it, and John wasn't opposed to it. And we try to vote, we're supposed to vote on everything, and for the most part, we do. But there are times I will make an executive decision, and Lisa be damned. But she always makes me pay for it. Do not be misled.
So, Joe, though, you were talking about educative.
I should
have
wrote it down. Edit this out.
You hate when I edit. I have something educative that I wanted to bring up. In counseling, and specifically in group counseling, we talk about 11 therapeutic or curative factors. All 11 are present in every episode, but there's three I wanted to really specifically mention. The first is installation of hope, that I feel like every podcast episode really provides that for other people. Second is the idea of universality, that we are not alone in what we're going through, that other people have experienced it too, and there's not something wrong with us just because of whatever we're experiencing. And the third one is catharsis. I feel like that's
really... I'll tell you on the way home. Google it.
But it's just the ability to get that burden off of your shoulders. And I feel like that's part of what the guests get, maybe.
Oh, that's his focus.
No, that's his focus. I stole it from him. It used to really piss him off, too.
But I hear what you're saying. The you're not alone thing is the most important, because hopelessness, I have found that hopelessness comes from the feeling of isolation and you're alone. And if we can get somebody to understand that you're not unique in this issue, that there are others who have suffered and others who have recovered, and you can recover and in turn redeem yourself. Being alone is, I believe, the most dangerous thing that we as alcoholics and addicts, even in recovery, can do. And most of the people who I've known to relapse came after a stint of isolation. talking to yourself, get out of the house. There's a crazy person with you. That's real. Talk to somebody. And whatever we can do to make people feel like they're not alone, they're not unique, they're not super special, you know, we'll do. And I do think that translates through the show, and I'm very proud of that fact.
I always felt that even in AA and also in our podcast, part of the message is whatever you've done, someone has done worse.
Mm-hmm. Unless you have a dead body in your silica right now, somebody has done worse.
To be fair, I heard that story in a meeting before. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Oh, the silica dead body in the silica. Excellent.
Because for a lot of people, me included, it was a lot of guilt about stuff that I've done. And that's part of the thing that kept me isolated and in turn kept me from asking for help and the whole long list. And so, you know, being able to hear the stories of drug muling, hit and runs, and flipping people's cars, and all sorts of other, anything you can imagine, you can hear it in a meeting. And getting that across is part of the importance of the show. And I mean, we get a lot of people listening to our show from like AA and stuff and friends of friends. But it's also just random people who find it. And I think that's the important part. That's the message to get across. That no matter what you've done, you can come back from it.
Did you remember what you wanted to ask yet?
It got absorbed. That's all good.
Did it get absorbed?
Yeah.
I like Joe. Keep him.
All right, we will.
I'll stick around a little bit.
Did we cover those three topics?
Yeah. And the other kind of big thing for me as a listener is I'm close to some people who have been through the program. Mm-hmm. And part of what I admire about them is that they seem to have kind of a transcendence about them, that kind of a peace. And we've talked on previous episodes about the archetype of the hero's journey, that somebody goes through this time of trial and difficulty, but comes out on the other side better for having gone through it. And I feel that way often listening to your guests, that they've come to terms with things in a way that I really admire and almost am envious of, because they are so honest. And I heard you say, Lisa, in a recent episode about something about letting go of your secrets or your, do you remember what that involves?
Sorry.
But it's like your secrets hold you back. And when you have no secrets, then you have.
Nobody can hurt you.
Yeah.
And you have no secrets. Yeah.
And Because
I taught her that lesson. That's one of the lessons I did teach Lisa. If somebody's giving you shit about something that you've done, put it out there and they can't hurt you anymore with it.
It takes away all the power. I feel like it's sort of the opposite of a contact buzz, but when I listen to the show, I feel like I get contact serenity.
Cool.
Just I feel, and we talk about in counseling about vicarious learning.
The truly lucky ones can learn from other people's mistakes without having to go through them. Something I wasn't able to do, I had to learn from what I did.
Yeah,
if I did at all. So I understand that bad feeling.
Well, maybe we could come to a close.
Have we properly advertised for 8 Saints, like where they find you everywhere and all?
I don't think that we have.
8SaintsRadio.com. John runs the website, and we have a new show generally released every Wednesday, but we have gotten to a schedule where we do it 3 weeks on and then 1 week off to fight burnout.
We're on iTunes.
And also on iTunes. 8SaintsRadio.com.
I think sometimes it's easier to listen to the podcast on iTunes, because if you're listening to it on your phone or on a computer and you get a call or a message, the iTunes will just stop it where it is, but you can pick up right away. Whereas on the website, sometimes...
The short answer is they don't pay me enough to develop YouTube for them.
John,
I got
John brings up a good point, because, all right, we asked John to do our media through the computer, right? And John was telling me, people were telling me, okay, I'm having a problem with this phone, or I'm having a problem with this phone. And John's like, look, there are like 20 different phones on the market. They all going to play a little different on each phone. And then you got laptops, you got pads. So I give him a lot of credit for finding that middle ground, that platform where it plays reasonably even on all platforms. And, you know, phones and computers and, you know, pads, all that stuff. It comes back to, unless you can see the world in somebody else's eyes or walk a mile in their shoes, you know, you take a lot of your shit for granted. And there was a time when I know John and Lisa were taking for granted how much actual time I was putting into a show. But we have since talked about it. I know what Lisa does. I know what John John does. I don't know all the specifics, but I know it's more difficult than I could do. I know that I wouldn't be here talking to you if it wasn't for Lisa, if it wasn't for John, because we just take care of each other. And we don't always get along. John's the worst communicator I've ever seen in my life.
You're one to talk.
John won't. No, I screw the communications up, but I communicate. John just won't. I can send him 8 texts. John, please, confirm something. You know, but we still want the same thing. We want a quality product, and we want to look good, okay? I did design the logo for 8 Saints. I will tell you that. That's part of my own.
Nice. You brought us swag. We have new t-shirts.
Yes, you have.
Thank you.
Don't they come with sleeves? Gerald has altered his shirt.
That was funny.
I appreciate that.
I feel like we should take a group. I so that everybody can I want see you to know what joke means.
Yes.
We appreciate this.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
this is wonderful.
Any exposure outside of what we're doing, because we want it to grow and see where it goes. I got a vision, but I don't have any expectations, and this will help, and I appreciate it. And I will make sure that we have a link to your podcast.
Yeah. Well, we so greatly appreciate you coming down. I feel like we are in the midst of celebrities, so we are.
That's right.
We are humbled.
That's right.
Up next, Jay-Z and Beyonce.
Okay, so we're about ready to close. Any final thoughts from anybody?
I like drugs.
John, call your sponsor. Call your sponsor, John.
Thank you all so much.
Yes, thank you. Thank
and
you
when, for will sharing. This, when will this episode be available?
As soon as I edit it, which will probably be about Sunday or Monday.
That'd be perfect.
So we're recording this on Wednesday.
Okay.
Yeah. And you will, once it's out, you will be able to find it on Spotify, iTunes, or the app of your choice.
Mm-hmm.
We encourage and hope everybody will like our new Facebook page.
Uh-oh. I didn't even know you had a Facebook page.
Yes.
There you go.
Like and follow us, please.
What is the
and follow Ain't Saints Radio.
What is your website? What is your Facebook page?
Our Facebook page is just Mental Illness in Pop Culture.
In Pop Culture.
Okay. Facebook.com/ Mental Illness in Pop Culture.
Excellent.
Yes. And speaking of our Facebook page, and our main web page is Mental Illness in Pop Culture. Podomatic.com.
Yeah. And some editing there. Excellent.
And I especially want to thank, since our last episode about Robin Williams, we have picked up so many new likes and followers. And so I especially want to say hi to all of our new followers from Nepal, Saudi Arabia, and Venezuela. We especially appreciate
listening in Venezuela.
Two.
Excellent.
But we especially appreciated all the comments about the Robin Williams episode related to mental health and suicide. Those were greatly appreciated.
Are those two people related?
Nebraska Mental Illness and Pop Culture.
Yeah,
Brian Wilson and the Beach
Boys.
That's right.
That's us.
Excellent.
Listen to the Looney Tunes one. Apparently, Pepe was a rapist.
It was.
And we are also available on Twitter and Instagram.
This is gun to hell, people.
This is what happens when you have company.
I'm like six podcasters in a room.
I'm sitting here with 2 PhDs, 2 double masters, and John's rocket science ass. Rocket scientist. I feel smarter. I feel smarter osmosis. Automatically. You osmosis? Is that it?
Yes.
Does that work?
Here's the thing. What? There's a difference between feeling and fact. It doesn't necessarily make you smart.
That is very mental health centered.
See, you had to crush my egg.
No, as my egg was gonna hatch. I have to say that's not very nice.
That's
we're gonna have to give you a timeout.
So you don't have a green room, do you?
No.
Yeah, I was getting to that. See, our green room is actual bathroom.
We do have bathrooms.
That's why it's an actual bathroom.
Thanks for joining us.
That's where John puts his time out.
Thank you for having us.
All right.
All right, people.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.